Welcome back to the War at 33 and a Third podcast. I'm Adam Barrow.
I'm Benjamin Richardson.
And today we're going to be discussing David Bowie's 25th and, of course, final album, Black Star. So David Bowie, of course, rock legend, extremely prolific output. 25 albums, obviously, is a ton for anybody. Kind of at his creative and commercial peak in the 70s. But had some good stuff before and after.
For sure.
Yeah. So, and this album is, of course, his final, as he passed away from cancer that he kind of hid from the public until they released this album, right, 2 days after it was released.
In 2016.
Yeah.
Early 2016.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, everybody saw the music video,
mm-hmm,
and it was like, whoa, like, where's David Bowie been? Like, what is this song about? And then mm-hmm the day after, right, he died.
Pretty much, yeah. So, and the lyrics on this album really, really show that he knew he was going to die.
Yeah.
The lyrics are hyper-fixated on death and the afterlife and his life and legacy. And
yeah,
it makes for really, really haunting and really, really beautiful music.
Right.
It's one of his best.
This is definitely David Bowie's parting gift, and he knew it.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about the lyrical content. We're going to segue into talking about the songs kind of track by track. So the leading song is the title track, Black Star, which is a almost 10-minute long...
epic.
Yeah, it's epic is a good way to describe it. It's like the opening... it kind of opens and closes with the same lyrical content.
Right.
Musical content.
So it has like this first section, and then it breaks down into this really gorgeous, like, uh-huh, vocally... I don't know. It's really
sounds
lyrical.
Sounds like more American.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the... but the...
and then it comes back to like the same melody and the same mm-hmm lyrics, but it's slowed down because
yeah
it's the same tempo as the second section, the
yep
emergence.
Yeah, and it's that opening section is chant like it's very
religious and
yeah,
it, like metaphoric.
Mm, does not really sound much like Western music to me.
Oh really?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because of the melody or because of like the lyrical
like
content
and like the chanting and the way he's singing
mm
and like the religious focus, like you said. And it's the lyrical content in the beginning of that one is
the Villa of Ormond.
Yeah, really, really startling almost. I mean, he talks
of candles.
Yeah, stands a solitary candle on the day of execution. Only women kneel and smile. Like very,
right,
very dark and
very dark.
Like, and really comes through there, like very death focused. Like you said,
right,
that's probably the most religious he gets.
Yeah, and I think like the Ormond or whatever, that's like a allusion to Satan, right? Or is the
something
serpent?
Like that. Yeah, yeah, because I was reading into that. It's like Scandinavian or something like that. And
something
Ormond
like
means
that.
Serpent.
But just his vocal delivery and like the way he's like crooning in between like the lyrics,
mm-hmm,
it's really unsettling. And like
yeah
the way his voice sounds in the mix, I don't
yeah
know.
Yeah, that one really, it sounds like a choir of ghosts.
Right, he almost sounds like a ghoul.
Yep.
In that song, in the first half.
Yeah, and then it kind of switches, right? It gets a little more
upbeat.
Yeah,
it definitely comes out with.
And
like
he's singing again. He's
major
really
tonality.
Chanting, yeah,
it's like a nice, beautiful, yeah, regular vocal line.
Mm-hmm. But then, like this section to me is some of the most interesting lyrical content on the album, where he kind of repeats stuff like he kind of repeats, "I'm a black star, I'm a black star."
Mm-hmm.
He says like, "I'm not a Marvel star. I'm not a pop star. I'm not a film star."
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "I'm
not
a
porn
black
star."
Star. Yeah, yeah.
Something I love about this part of the song is when he says, "I'm not a gangster or not a gangstar."
Mm-hmm.
It's like this phaser effect comes on, and it sounds like amazing. And then it kind of like goes to like the bridge of that section. Maybe
mm-hmm
do you know what I'm talking
yeah
about?
Yeah, I do.
That's probably my favorite part
yeah
of it.
And to me, "I'm a black star." Like a lot of the lyrical content on here is kind of, it's very obviously death focused,
right?
And very
how do you
personal
interpret "Black Star"?
Yeah, but it's a lot of it's very open to interpretation. But I kind of interpret it as like I don't know how I would interpret "Black Star" as an object, but it just kind of feels like a rumination on his legacy, like how he feels he is.
He thinks he's a black star.
Yeah, I mean, I don't,
what does that mean though?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I
know.
I feel like it means he feels like he's unique. He's just not like any of these other labels.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. How he just goes through the list of all these different labels.
Because his identity is one of the most interesting things about him. Because he's, I mean, always been labeled as kind of a chameleon.
Right. How each album, especially in the 70s, would take on a different like aesthetic, a different like character. Even.
I mean, he played. I mean, the Thin White Duke on
Thin
the
White
Station
Duke
to Station, Ziggy Stardust.
On that
album.
Of course, I know the Diamond Dogs character.
Does the Diamond Dogs have a character? Okay.
Yeah, definitely the Thin White Duke and Ziggy Stardust are like the two that come to mind.
Major Tom.
Major Tom, of course. Yeah. How could you forget?
I mean, and he's always kind of played characters and kind of shifted genres and adapted in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, kind of saying like, just saying he is something definitively is like a final rumination on his identity. That's kind of how I interpret it. I feel like there are a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I just really thought that was like David Bowie's way of saying, I'm going to die. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, you could probably say that about every bit of this album.
I don't know, just because like I'm a black star, I feel like that's his way of saying like, I'm a star that's about to die.
Like, I'm imploding on myself.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, I'm about to be a black hole right now. Like, when a star
that's
dies.
That's probably what he means by black star, literally.
That's, like, kind of how I thought of it. But
I'm sure a black star is some kind of actual space thing.
Yeah, I don't know how much David Bowie knew about that. Obviously, a lot of his lyrics throughout the past have always had a fascination with space.
Absolutely. I mean, like, Ziggy Stardust was supposed to have fallen from space.
Right, yeah. And think about Life on Mars.
Space Oddity.
Yeah, that's definitely the biggest one that comes to mind.
Yeah, that's definitely a theme for him. So, and that song is one of the ones with a pretty famous music video.
That music video for me, definitely the Lazarus one sticks in my mind a lot better. Mm-hmm. But I like the... how Major Tom is like a character in that music video.
Really? Yeah.
He's it's like they're on like this like planet, and there's like a black sun, and it's really like cinematic.
Yeah.
It looks like a movie.
Like a little short film.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is, and it's just like Titanic. It's so long, it doesn't feel never boring. Not for a second.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like a 10-minute song.
Yeah, not at all. You just get really into it.
Right. And for me, that's like the sign of a good long song. Like, if a song is like that long and it doesn't
feel like
that, then it's perfect.
Like, what's the Velvet Underground one? Sister Jane. What's it called? On the it's like the side B of White Light, White Heat, the 17-minute long one.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I'm blanking on the title, but.
I haven't listened to that in a minute, dude.
Yeah, it's really good, but that one borders on feeling long. Whereas something like Hallelujah by Can, that one's even longer. And I don't feel like that one's a super long song.
I mean, if you're trying to talk about long songs, dude, I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know. There's plenty of long songs that I don't like.
Yeah. I mean, long song. Stay tuned next week when we have Close to the Edge by Yes.
With, Prog masterpiece.
Yeah. 18-minute, 10-minute, and 8-minute songs.
Yeah. Very long tracks.
Yeah.
3-track album.
I digress.
Yeah, okay.
So, all right. So, moving on to the next one, I guess. Track 2 is "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore."
Right. And aptly named after I think it's like a 17th or 16th century
it's named
play.
After a play.
By John Ford, I want to say.
Oh, I couldn't tell you. Let's see. Yes, John Ford.
Hey, let's go.
Nice.
How do you interpret these lyrics? Because I feel like they could almost come off as misogynistic if you weren't...
A little bit, yeah.
You know, he's like, she punched me like a dude. It's like, what's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. She punched me like a dude. I mean, androgyny has always been kind of a theme.
Yeah, of course. I think of the Ziggy Stardust days as a prime example of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if these lyrics are super meaningful.
I don't know. I almost interpret...
Well,
because wasn't David Bowie pretty... a cheater.
I couldn't tell you. I don't really know.
I'm pretty sure he definitely messed around with infidelity a lot.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe he's like talking about himself. I really don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Well, so there's
or
a
how
line,
much it has to do with the play even.
There's a line, she stole my purse with rattling speed. So like you could be saying he's calling time a whore. Like it's kind of like stealing himself out from under him. I don't know. Like, that's kind of, like,
that's
fringe.
Definitely,
like, I feel like he's probably just... It's probably, for the most part, a little bit of nonsense. But
right, just saying what sounds good.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song, though. I mean,
I love it.
Opens up with just pounding really fast.
I love the, it starts out with, like, this... It's like this sigh from David Bowie. You hear him?
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
And then you get these drums that are just driving the whole track.
Yeah, never let up.
Never let up. I love the drum plan. I don't know who plays drums on this.
I don't either.
But... They should get a hug.
Absolutely. And it's just, like, really, it's like swirling, like, really pretty guitars and like a lot of horns. This is one of the jazzier tracks on there. Like there's extended horn solos.
Right. Yeah, this album, the instrumentation, it, for the most part, it's like synth, sax, guitar, and
there's a
bass.
There's a lot of elements he has not really incorporated before musically. Like, I mean, I can't say I'm familiar with too much of his output like in the 90s and 2000s, but
I'm not either.
Yeah, I don't think there's much else where he goes. I mean, it's jazzy. I mean, Black Star, the track, I mean, we kind of neglected to mention, there's some pretty significant horns at work there.
Right. Like, I think every track especially. Has a horn except for Dollar Days.
That sounds right.
Or maybe there's even a sax solo in that. I can't remember.
There might be.
But, of course, David Bowie...
I don't think there's any horns in Dollar Days.
I don't think so either. Yeah. But David Bowie, of course, himself played the sax.
Okay.
And it's always been on his albums. Like, I think of Ziggy Stardust. Like, all the sax on that. Yeah. He's definitely a big fan of the instrument. And I think he actually played a lot of the sax on that album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, this is kind of the first time it's felt like jazz, though. You know what I mean? It's
felt
like more freeform and...
Yeah, some of the... Yeah, definitely a lot of the solos on this are definitely have a very strong jazz influence. Mm-hmm. Like, all the sax licks.
Yeah, but this one, like... It's kind of hard to describe. Like, the guitar and the... Like, I think there's some piano at work here, too.
I know what you're talking about. When the sax is, like, at its climax and there's some...
It just feels like... It feels like it's swirling around you.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. I really like this one.
I like that. I think this is, like, a great follow-up. It's just, like, the drums. Like, whenever I hear those, like, I know I'm in for a good track.
Mm-hmm. So, the next... The next song is Lazarus. And so that's,
I think this or Black Star probably takes the cake for like the best song off the album.
I would agree. I'd probably take Lazarus. This is probably, this is one of the most lyrically interesting songs that I've heard, probably.
Like ever?
Probably. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, that's kind of hard to say. Like, it's up there. Top tier.
Right. And this one's just as heavy with the,
Yeah, this one is probably the most. Like, one of the most explicitly death-focused. I mean, it plays like it's... I mean, I'll let the lyrics speak for themselves. Look up here, I'm in heaven.
Start in verse 1.
Look up here, man, I'm in danger.
Mm-hmm.
This way or no way, you know I'll be free, just like that bluebird.
I dropped my cell phone down below.
Yeah, I dropped my cell phone down below.
Yeah, for me, this track, it's like the music video is almost as iconic as the song.
Mm-hmm.
I almost enjoyed watching the music video as much as I do like the song.
Yeah.
For you, those of you who haven't seen it, it's very haunting. You see like a very frail David Bowie, and he has like buttons over his eyes, and it's like throughout the song he's trying to write, and at the very end of the song he's dragged back into a closet, and I think that's like symbolic that he wants to keep on writing, but he can't any longer.
Yeah, I mean,
heavy track.
It really just plays like he's talking, like from beyond the grave.
Right,
and listening to it after he
for
dies,
me, this
really
is
like
David
that.
Bowie is like talking to us from heaven.
Exactly,
and of course the first line, "Look up here, I'm in heaven."
Yeah, yeah, and then that last verse I was talking about, this way or no way, you know I'll be free. Just like that bluebird. Like, it just kind of feels like he wants to keep going, but he feels liberated a little bit at least.
Right.
It's just really complex feelings about death.
Right.
And life on Earth.
It's just like, I don't know, it marvels me how he's like able to put that even into words and song.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that shows his like talent as an artist.
Yeah.
To be able to like tackle death with like such an artful album and song.
Yeah. And yeah, and Lazarus is like, it's kind of like spacey too. Like it's almost, it almost feels like surreal. Like it's slower and has like...
And the outro, and you just hear that guitar, boom, boom, and it's just like, you just hear the drums, it just fades out perfectly.
Yeah. Really, really great one. And Sue, or In a Season of Crime, that one is also a little less... A little less death focused.
Yeah, this one's definitely
has some mean guitar. Like it's kind of like.
Oh yeah, it sounds like you're sneaking around. It sounds like a spy movie theme. Yeah. Almost. Like the guitar riff. If you were to just isolate that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this strikes me as one of the weaker tracks. If I had to pick.
A little bit.
Not to say that it's a bad song.
Yeah, it kind of goes like, lyrically, kind of goes. Sue is like a spouse he's talking to, I guess, and he's kind of. Like relaying different conversations.
I've actually
like,
read that this has like a lot of ties to the "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore" play.
Okay,
I think a lot of this is like
So he was kind of inspired by that play as a whole, lyrically.
I guess so.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
But these lyrics make, like, they don't make a lot of sense to me.
Not a ton, yeah. I mean, it goes through what kind of seems like Sue's death, I guess, and then kind of Sue leaving him, stuff like that. Like, it kind of encapsulates the whole life, I guess, which I guess you could relate
right
to his whole life kind of being over. He feels right. Like he's completed his entire life.
Guess so.
Yeah. it's not a bad song.
It's definitely not a bad song. Yeah. I definitely like it. For me, this one's definitely one of the more rocky songs, and the drums mm-hmm. are really driving this one yeah. as well.
I really like that guitar.
Yeah. I think it's cool. It's a cool lick, for sure.
Yeah, so...
Girl loves me.
That one's kind of crazy.
So, something to note about this song is that if it doesn't make any sense what he's saying, it's because he's speaking in Nadsat a lot of the time, which is a made-up language dialect from Anthony Burgess's Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. So, I know China is, like, their word for
yeah,
a woman.
Yeah,
Vidi, he says Vidi, that means like uh-huh. see, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Kind of a weird choice, but there's a refrain of where the F did Monday go?
Yeah.
Which is really telling to me. Like, he feels like his life is just kind of right. passed him by.
Yeah, he's like, where the heck did Monday go? It's like yeah. where my time is escaping me right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah. And that one's also really like slow and lurching and
mm-hmm. For me, this one definitely has, like, the craziest vocal performance, maybe. It's yeah. definitely the most unorthodox on the album.
On that refrain, he's kind of yelping. You can tell he's, like, yeah. kind of really passionate and, like, really mm-hmm. afraid. Like, where is his time going?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really good stuff, I think.
All right.
Dollar Days, the sixth track, is kind of... It's kind of like more like acoustic, almost.
Yeah, it's a little calmer. Mellowed down. It's more of, like, a beautiful ballad-y-like mm-hmm. song.
And of course, ends with him kind of repeating, "I'm trying to, I'm dying to."
And of course, you know, it's like that's an expression. I'm dying to meet you, but I think like this takes on like the literal sense,
yeah.
which is really kind of crazy when yeah. he says that. It's like there's no room for interpretation.
Yeah, and he says, "Don't believe for just one second I'm forgetting you." It's like a last message to the listener.
Whenever I hear that, I'm like, oh. He's like, "I'm trying to, I'm dying yeah. to." Oh, so
beautiful.
Just thinking about that gives me goosebumps. Mm-hmm.
And then our closing track is "I Can't Give Everything Away," and that kind of that's one of the stronger ones as well.
Right,
it's a fantastic.
I will say,
closer.
I love the transition. How like what is that like? Electronic drums, maybe.
Might be.
It sounds a little bit like that to me.
The drums aren't super forceful in that track.
They start at the end of Dollar Days.
Yes, it does
fade.
And then
right. It like leads into the next track when the drums and everything starts coming together.
Yeah.
And I think there's harmonica on this track in the opening.
Yeah. Okay, so the harmonica is kind of interesting. That's actually sampled from one of the ambient songs on Low, or one of the instrumental songs on Low, rather.
Oh, he sampled himself?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's the same harmonica.
Oh, I can hear it now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah. So, "I Can't Give Everything Away," to me, is kind of hard to... like get a full meaning, like a full grasp on it there. Like it's very clearly related to like he can't give everything away. It clearly feels like he's leaving Earth. Like but I just can't
I,
really
I interpret that as
meaning.
Like he feels like he has a lot more to give but he can't. I don't know. That's the way I interpret
yeah.
it. Like he wants to keep on writing but he just can't anymore.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that yeah, that makes a lot of sense actually. And that one there's like a like kind of like a pulsing like synth string I guess. Dun dun dun
mm-hmm.
dun dun dun. I think that sounds really cool. And the harmonica kind of blares every once in a while.
I like that melody that it's really easy to
mm-hmm.
Remember,
yeah.
catch your ear on too.
It really is a beautiful one.
And then the ending, it's just kind of like a simple like fade out almost, right?
Yeah.
It's kinda just kind of like a debuild.
Keeps repeating, "I can't get everything away."
And then it just kind of fades out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to me, like, that album is like... there's really not very much wrong with it at all. Like, if I had to say something I didn't like about it, like, I guess the second side is a little, like, obviously it's still, like, just lyrically amazing, just phenomenal songwriting, but it's just kind of, I guess, a little less musically interesting. But to me, the closer, "I Can't Get Everything Away," kind of redeems it a little bit.
That's how I feel. I mean, because doesn't the first side also contain, like, the two epics? Or
yeah, so first side is...
Black Star, it's the first three, and then Lazarus.
Yeah. Right, and it's kind of, you can't beat Black Star and Lazarus on one side. So that's definitely the superior side. Yeah, those first three tracks are bangers, certified.
Yeah, if I had the bigger complaint, I guess that would be it. But I mean,
maybe I feel like Lazarus would have made an amazing closer.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But I feel like any of these tracks really would be a pretty good closer. Now that I'm thinking about it.
They all just have that sense of finality.
Right. Like, every track, it's just like, I don't know, it just gives me chills thinking about it. Yeah. It's like such a final statement.
Yeah. It really is just, like, I'm just in disbelief. I mean, he went so long without making something that was, like, that inspired. And
right.
He just came back and, like, delivered that parting gift. It's just so remarkable.
If I remember correctly, I think it was, like, in 2000, he was, like, on tour and he had, like, a heart. Or maybe, I don't know, you know about that? He had like a heart attack or something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was a stroke. Something. I hope I'm remembering this right. But then he just basically like disappeared, and then he just came out with this magnum opus.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of, the next day, which came out in 2013, which I'm not super familiar with, was supposed to be kind of a bounce back to some degree.
Okay.
Yeah, that was decently well received.
I mean, from the public eye, though. Like, he hadn't done any touring since like the 2000s. And that might be due to like health concerns maybe near the end of his life, even.
I mean, the report is that he had been battling that cancer for almost 2 years.
Right, a while.
Yeah, so he probably had some health issues for a long time.
And I heard that when he was recording that album, he was supposed to be in remission, maybe.
Really?
I heard it. And then, I feel like even knowing that, he kind of knew that his time was very limited.
Yeah, it was very clear that he knew.
And for me, this album, it's just like so urgent.
Yeah.
It has a sense of urgency. You know, he needed to record this.
He needed to get this message out before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Share his reflections and stuff.
I mean, any art that's like that urgent is always going to be good, I feel like. It just needs to
be
said.
Absolutely. I mean, an interesting question that I've kind of like wrestled with is, does his dying make it better for some, like, somehow?
Mm.
But the conclusion I've kind of come to is that, like, I don't really know. I mean, I think, like, he knew he was going to die. Like, it was almost like a foregone conclusion. Like, if you kind of think about the kind of stuff he's saying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he knew. So, I mean, it was going to... I don't know if you can really think about it, if it would be still good with him not dying, because they're kind of, like, intrinsically linked.
I don't know. I definitely think, like, an artist's death can give weight to their lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say, like, an example of that is, like, Joy Division. And, like, it's like, when I first listened to that, I was like, I really don't get it. But once you start listening to it again and you have, like, some context, it's like, it really is, like, a bleak album. And I feel like the same thing with this. It's just like, there's no way that he's not meaning everything he's saying. Mm-hmm. It's a very genuine performance. Yeah. Speaking of his performance, I think, like vocally, it's awesome. Like, he's, like, almost, like, embracing his old... Yeah, David Bowie voice.
He sounds remarkably good for an elderly man.
Like, I just feel like he's embracing like his unorthodox voice, really.
Yeah, and
on a lot of these tracks.
It's by no means the exact same singing voice, or even trying to replicate the exact same singing voice from the 70s. It's very different.
But it does have that classic Bowie, like, vibrato that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, it's definitely Bowie-ing, but...
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But something about this vocal performance, it's just like, it's way different than any of his other ones to me.
Mm-hmm.
He just wasn't afraid to put it all out there on this one, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, very little restraint, I guess.
Right. It just, I don't know, like, 'Tis a Pity She Was a Whore, like, embracing, like, those weird parts of his voice and the breathiness.
On Pity, where he goes, 'Tis a Pity.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, like, those really, really weird performances that just come together nicely.
Very unique.
For
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. Just what a great way to solidify your legacy. Just to go out on top like that.
I know. Like, I can't believe it. Like, I know other artists have, like, parting gifts, but I feel like this is the best one I've heard.
Yeah, I'd say this, in terms of, like, parting gifts, another artist... who passed away before the album's release, Fife Dog from A Tribe Called Quest.
Mm.
And their album, also in 2016, I think, We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. I mean, that is a complete return to form.
Mm.
I mean, that was just a remarkable album, just up there with Low End Theory and Midnight Marauders. And it's like, some of the Fife Dog verses are because they had a bunch recorded, right? Because they were already planning this reunion. And then Fife Dog passed away from diabetes complications before it was finished. Not even just released, like before it was finished. So probably three or four different Q-Tip verses. And the whole song at the end are kind of dedicated to him. Like they're kind of wrestling with his passing.
Mm.
So that one to me is... And that's the last album. They said that's the last album they're going to do together.
Right, as a group.
Yeah. So right. that album to me also rivals it. But I mean, this one just feels like... That felt very like personal, I guess. Like we're celebrating the loss of a friend. But because it was a group, right? But Bowie by himself...
Right. And it's just him talking about it, himself.
Yeah, it kind of like rings different. You know what I mean?
Didn't Leonard Cohen? Didn't he drop something in 2016? Because he also died in 2016.
He did.
Legendary singer songwriter.
He did. You Want It Darker?
Yeah, that was
the name of the album.
Mm-hmm. I haven't actually given that a listen. It's on my list.
I have heard
list.
The title track. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It does not really sound much like early like folk stuff. It's kind of like dark, like it's like a pulsating kind of synth.
Right.
And his voice is very, very hoarse. And
right. I know a lot of people like to compare that to Black Star.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be one of Bowie's best.
Yeah. How would you rank this in his discog? Because obviously his output from the 70s, you could pick like any album from that decade and make a case for it, in my opinion.
So... I thought about it a little bit. I'm not entirely set, but I'd probably say, like, this is not a slide against Black Star, but I'd probably take Low, Heroes, and Ziggy before it.
Okay. Low, Heroes, and Ziggy. Okay. I don't know. Cause...
And I'm tempted to put it over Low and Heroes, just because I would, like, I think the instrumental sides of those two are really good. I'd rather have like some of his great songwriting.
I agree. I do. I'm a fan of like the Eno production.
Yeah,
and that's always cool to see like a Bowie Eno collab. Yeah. Like what? But
those three. Those
and a the Fripp is on. Right. Does Fripp, the guitar for
guitar
Heroes?
Heroes. Some beautiful guitar
parts. Oh my gosh, Heroes. Okay, I think Heroes has a case for being one of the best just because of the song Heroes.
Yeah,
which is probably like one of the best Bowie songs ever. Best songs ever, maybe.
Yeah. Period. Even.
Such a beautiful song.
Fantastic. And Beauty and the Beast and Joe the Lion.
Yeah, I love that opener, Beauty. Or it's Beauty and the Beast that opens it, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And Joe the Lion is the second track. So my list, obviously, like, Low is up there. Mm-hmm. Ziggy. Heroes. I'm a big fan of Hunky Dory. I really like Hunky Dory.
See, I feel like Hunky Dory... I think it has some of his best writing, right? Like Life on Mars.
Changes.
Yeah.
I think Eight Line Poem is awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, it just really feels like there's some serious filler on there.
In the like, I like the, I think there's one about like Andy Warhol. I didn't like
that. Yeah, the Andy Warhol. Yeah, that one especially.
Wait. Let me look at this.
We're going to take a look at the Hunky Dory track list. I mean, it really does feature some of his best songs straight up, but I feel like that's
Things is probably one of my favorite Bowie songs.
I've kind of blanked on that one. That one's phenomenal.
That song is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is definitely Kooks is on that album though. Okay.
Kooks is all right.
That song is awful in my opinion.
You think so?
I don't like that song. Come with us, the Kooks. Like, oh my god, like, oh my gosh.
I kind of like the Stuck on Romancing. It's like a couple more voices kind of harmonize with him on the romancing. I think Kooks is all right.
Yeah,
Kooks gets some hate.
I just
Kooks
like
gets some hate.
I just did like I don't know. Like for me, this is like
I'll be a Kooks.
This
apologist.
Is the Yellow Submarine of Revolver. Like that's how I
as we discussed
song.
Last week. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me this is probably the best entry level David Bowie album, Hunky Dory. Wouldn't you say?
Sure. Yeah.
Like that's what I tell people to listen to if they want to
your
get
first
David
one.
Bowie.
Yeah.
That's the first one I listened to, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think Ziggy was definitely my first. And Ziggy, talk a little bit about Ziggy. I mean, that's...
The best glam rock album, period?
Yeah. That's...
That like, what else could rival that? Like,
yeah,
Transformer?
I guess.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so...
I'd probably put Electric Warrior.
Electric T-Rex, Warrior?
Right below that. But anyway. T-Rex. Ziggy Stardust is, like, to me, that's kind of what I think of when I think of a perfect album. Like, I really can't think of very many flaws. Like, it's like, it almost feels like every note is just, like, nice.
Yeah, like, Ziggy Stardust is amazing. Yeah. I remember the first time I listened to that, and I was like, wow. Like,
mm-hmm. Wow. Where has this been? It's like,
right. I was like, how have I not listened to this? Like, how come people aren't talking about this album?
Yeah.
Like,
and obviously, like, people are talking about that album. Like, but it's one of the most famous.
Not everybody.
But, yeah, not everybody. Not a whole ton of people. You know what I mean, obviously.
Right. It's not like everybody's like, dude, hear that David Bowie album?
Yeah. But,
yeah, I mean, like, and for me, that album almost has as much of an emotional attachment as Black Star.
Yeah.
The songs like Rock and Roll Suicide.
5 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I get goosebumps at 5 years every time. When he hits the peak.
When he goes, when he hits wow! the crescendo. He sounds like Mario.
Oh, I kiss you, you're beautiful. And he's like, he's almost like shouting.
I kiss you, you're beautiful. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And then it's like, I miss the you drums hit. And it's like 5 years with a nice, like, choir almost. A bunch of background singers. I get goosebumps.
That album is phenomenal. Listen to that album.
Yeah.
That's definitely like, that might be a top 10 album for me.
Yeah. Yeah, if that's a... if you're behind the curve on old rock music, I guess, that's definitely a fantastic one to start with. Some of the early Bowie stuff.
Okay, I'm going to rank my Bowie.
All right.
I figured it out.
All right.
I think Ziggy Stardust is probably got to be number one for me. I might put Black Star second.
Okay.
Tied with, like, Low. I love Low.
Okay.
And then after that, like, I think I might like Hunky Dory better than Heroes.
Okay.
And then Heroes after that.
That's defensible. What do you think about Scary Monsters?
And oh, I forgot Pools? About that. Yeah, that's the thing about Bowie, dude. Like, he has so many records. Yeah.
Scary Monsters is pretty crazy.
I think that's super underrated. I don't know how underrated that is, mm-hmm. but I think that that's a really great album.
I agree. I really like
Fun Scary thing Monsters. To note about that, the Japanese vocals, I think on the first track, that's actually the girl on Kimono My House. It's the girl on the right. That's her.
Is she really?
Yeah.
On the cover?
On the cover of Sparks, Kimono, My House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's just an interesting little tidbit of information. Cool, some trivia.
I've never heard that. That's pretty cool.
I don't know how I know that, but I do.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Well, all right. This has been our discussion of David Bowie's Black Star.
David Bowie Black Star, 2016.
Yeah.
Parting album.
Yeah. If you're into something that's remarkably beautiful. Yeah. Very morbid. This is
hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah, jokes aside, phenomenal album. Give it a listen. And thanks for listening to us.
Peace out.